This summer, State Senator David Carlucci put his political future on the line, running in a seven-way Democratic primary for an open congressional seat in the Hudson Valley. The race ultimately didn't break his way, with the Rockland County Democrat finishing in fourth place. Earlier this month, Senator Carlucci called into the Capitol Press Room to discuss this chapter of his political career and reflect on his decade in the state Senate. We began our conversation by discussing what made him decide last fall to leave his job in Albany and run for Congress.
Well, I was really surprised when Congresswoman Lowy announced that she was not running again, something that I had thought about in the past, but in the immediate time surrounding Nita Lowy announcing that she was not running again, I thought about how many of the bills that I've been introducing in New York State are because many of the issues should be done on a federal level, but we see that they're not. So we do them on the state level. And representing New York and knowing the ins and outs of state government and local government to be a strong, effective representative on the federal level. So I figured, hey, you know, you got to take the step forward and do it. I often am asked for advice when people are running for office, and I always say, hey, you got to be in it to win it. You miss the shots you don't take. So that's why I ultimately decided, I believe, hey, I could serve at a more effective level for the people I'm serving, and figured, hey, I'll take a stab at it and go for it.
As the field got crowded, what did you see as your path to victory? What was sort of your lane that you thought you could navigate?
Well, I thought that, hey, you know, I have a base of support, and that if I can get my people out to vote, I can win. Obviously, it was an unprecedented time with so many things happening in our community, in our nation. And so a lot of the ideas that I originally thought about in terms of, hey, you know, having a strong door-to-door campaign and all that were really thrown out the window. But as the field continued to increase, I thought, hey, you know, it's not really a bad thing for me. Being that I have strong name recognition, I did some polling, and it showed, hey, I'm the leader in this race in terms of name recognition, and if the vote were held today, that I would win. But obviously, those polls are just a predictor, a test of that, a snapshot of that day, and things can change.
So what was the campaign process like from October when you got in until middle of March when everything had to stop due to COVID-19 and you had to transition to a virtual campaign?
Well, what was interesting was the first that I was surprised that Congresswoman Lowy was not running again, and then had to kind of start from scratch in terms of fundraising and starting a congressional campaign. Even though I'd been in the Senate for 10 years and had been elected five times in the Senate, the congressional campaign is totally different. So you have to start from scratch in terms of fundraising. The campaign contribution limits are different and all of that. And the networking as well. The district is a different district geographically from what I've been serving in, including the Senate district, but a little bit more than that. So in terms of you know, getting on the phone, start fundraising and building support, that you kind of just go crazy and start from the ground floor. And that was humming along until basically COVID became front and center, and everything kind of took a pause. It was reacting to, hey, you know, we've got a lot to do on the state level, on the local level, and responding to that, and then trying to creep in there the campaigning and fundraising as well for a congressional campaign. Obviously, became challenging, but was definitely an interesting experience.
And what issues did you try to focus on during your campaign so as to differentiate yourself from a crowded field of Democrats where there might not be a lot of ideological breathing room?
One of the nice things in the campaign was that we, even though we were virtual, we were having many debates, and we had these forums on Facebook, on Zoom, on other platforms where pretty much all the candidates came and we got to debate the issues. Now, what I found was, and this happens almost in every campaign, where it's like only certain issues get brought up. There's so many issues to talk about. And if we look through the campaigns that I've had over the years, maybe, you know, starting in 2010 in my race for the open seat in the Senate, how the issues we were talking about then are drastically different from what we're talking about now. And even the things that we were talking about just last year are not really on the minds of the moderators of these debates or the people asking the questions. Often I find what gets thrown out there, you know, is enticing to people, and then you'll go from that issue to another issue, but stay in that realm and maybe not be able to get into other issues that might be something that you think are important or could resonate, but you're just stuck on maybe just some key topics. Some of the things I thought were extremely important for us, I mean, affordability is the big issue. And obviously now we then went into the COVID mode, so a lot of it was just responding to COVID and what we're doing in response to that. I mean, what I saw on the front lines in terms of in the Senate was just this, we were inundated with calls and helping respond to residents that were struggling. The biggest thing was unemployment claims and all that. So that was one of the big issues dealing with on the front line. But then some of the issues that we're talking about affordability, the environment. We have Indian Point here in the district. That's the nuclear power plant and the decommissioning. We have both sides of the Hudson River where the new Tappan Zee Bridge is, and access to the city in terms of transportation with the MTA and having rail across the bridge. Those are some of the issues that we talked about quite a bit. Gun violence. This is something, and what I found was, hey, all of us pretty much agreed on the issues. There was not too much daylight between us on the issues, which made it very interesting in a Democratic primary debate.
About a month before your primary, George Floyd was killed by Minnesota police, setting off social unrest around the country and really igniting conversations about systemic racism in our institutions. How did that alter the dynamic of your race? And did you feel, as a white candidate, that you were now at some sort of a disadvantage in a Democratic primary?
Well, I think it was a healthy debate and something that I saw in our race, the questions turned to systemic racism and what is done about it, what can you do on the local level, the state, the federal level, what needs to be done. So it definitely changed some of the questions that we were talking about and the answers in terms of the debate. But I think it's a healthy thing, and particularly for New York in pushing us to pass important legislation, I'm hopeful that momentum continues and we continue to root out racism wherever it exists. And we know we have our work ahead of us, but I'm proud of the work that's been done in New York recently. But I know we've got a lot more to do.
In your 2018 primary for your Senate seat, the crux of your opponent's campaign was your involvement in the Independent Democratic Conference. What role did this issue play in your congressional primary, and how did you address it when I'm sure it came up on the virtual campaign trail?
Yeah, I think it was a challenge. It's one that I knew would be the highlight in the campaign. I think, unfortunately for me, what happened was it was able to be labeled as, okay, he's the guy from the Independent Democratic Conference, and that kind of closed some people's minds to, okay, what has he actually done as a lawmaker? And what I would try to say is, look, hey, we had the Independent Democratic Conference. That is no longer around. I'm now in the Democratic Conference. The last legislative session, I was able to pass more legislation than any lawmaker in the state of New York, and really talk about the effectiveness of cutting through the red tape, cutting through a partisan divide in the past, and being able to represent the people in my district and get things done. That was the message that I really wanted to deliver, and I think was important to deliver. But I think, as always, it's what is the climate that you're in? And I think, obviously, this climate this year, and much to similar in a way to when I ran in 2010, a little different, but just this idea of, hey, we need something new. And ultimately, I think that was obvious in terms of the voters deciding, hey, we want someone, maybe they don't have elected office experience. And to move forward with, hey, you know, someone that doesn't have that experience, and that will be different. That change is good. And I think that was the time and the place that we were at. But we had great candidates in the race, and I think it was a healthy exercise in democracy to be debating those issues, taking the different experience that people had, myself as a lawmaker, some other lawmakers on the state and local level, and then people with no political experience at all. And I think that's healthy to have those debates and see how, hey, you got to put yourself forward and take that risk if you want to make a real change. So, I mean, it's bittersweet for me because I had to put it on the line and not run again for re-election for the Senate, and something that I know there's still a lot of work to do here in the Senate. But I'm excited for new opportunities, and what I really want to do is take the experience that I've had in these 10 years in the Senate in passing quite a few pieces of legislation and working it through the legislative process, understanding how the system works in New York and in other states and on the federal level, to use that experience to continue to do the people's work in saying, hey, maybe I'm not a lawmaker, but how can I help advance these issues, whether it's developmental disabilities or addiction or criminal justice, and how can we continue to push bureaucracy, I believe, to do better.
Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about the sort of climate and what the electorate in your district and across the state was interested in, because, you know, in announcing your run, you told the Journal News that you thought you were kind of the candidate aligned with the times. But it sounds like in retrospect now that you feel like looking at your primary and around the state that your makeup and background might have been ill-suited for what Democratic primary voters were looking for in June 2020.
Yeah, and hey, you know, you don't have a crystal ball. You know, that was October of 2019. And so, yes, things did change. And our society, our political climate, and the world changed in a way that nobody could really predict. But with that said, I still felt that, hey, I was the candidate aligned with the times in terms of, hey, we need someone that's really going to deliver, not just talk and not give a good speech, but actually back it up with action. And that's something that I've always been focused on, is how do we actually move forward, whether it's in political disarray or economic disarray, how do we find that common ground to advance and move our community forward? And that's something that I've always been effective at. And that's why I thought, hey, in this time where we have this political division in Washington and we see that, hey, a lot of things that need to get done on the federal level just aren't, and that's why we have to do them on the state level, I thought, hey, I can't sit back and not bring my expertise to the table. I saw that opportunity to serve at a more effective level, and I said, hey, I'm going to do it.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion with State Senator David Carlucci about his unsuccessful run for Congress. And when we get back, we'll discuss his first ever election loss, what he'll miss in Albany, and much more.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and health care.
We're continuing our conversation with State Senator David Carlucci, a Rockland County Democrat who lost a seven-way primary this summer for an open congressional seat in the Hudson Valley. There was an early June poll from Data for Progress that suggested the race was very tight, with a plurality of voters undecided. What was your read of the race at that time, you know, with about 3 weeks to go? Did you think victory was possible?
Yeah, up until the very end, we saw all the polling was showing that I was in the lead. We did know that it was a very, there were quite a few people that were undecided. It's amazing when you look at the polling data from late 2019 till up until the election, how many of the candidates were virtually unknown. People did not know who they were. And that's something that I thought, okay, you know, it's very hard to build these relationships up over time. But I think in the case with Mondaire Jones, that he ran a very effective campaign, a very a great candidate, extremely smart, and then had these validators, backers, that came in and endorsed, like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and AOC, that I think really helped him to have that credibility with the voters that, hey, you know, looks good, great candidate, great resume. Having those validators, I think, really helped him to deliver and push that over the top. For someone that might have been skeptical to say, okay, sounds good, but can he deliver? And then having those validators, I think, proved to be very helpful in the race.
Yeah, how frustrating was it to see some of those endorsements, either the big ticket names that people were able to secure, as well as, you know, state lawmakers who might not have gone your way, or labor support that might have broken for other opponents? How was that just mentally coping with that?
Well, I think it's something that I expected. Running the race, I knew, given that I've been in the Senate for 10 years and have had to be on some controversial issues. And I know that, you know, I would say that in 10 years, pushing, actually having to make decisions and hard decisions, you piss off everyone at least once or twice. And that's why some of the beauty of not having a record is effective in running for office. So it's something that I expected. And I think that you can't take any of this personal. You have to have your heart on your sleeve, but you have to know that you're doing the best that you can. You know, the simple saying, do your best and God will do the rest. And just stay focused and work for the people that you know and you serve.
Would have been nice to have AOC come in and endorse you, though, right?
Well, I mean, hey, it was you have some real superstars in the political scene now. And I think in a Democratic primary, some of these validators are extremely helpful. There's no question about it.
So what was election night like for you? And I imagine it's got to be pretty different, because had you ever lost an election before?
I did. I lost my first election.
Okay.
Back in 2003, yes. So I have a saying, hey, when you win, you party. When you fail, you ponder. And I think that was one of the great experiences for me at a young age running for office. Losing was extremely valuable, because I think if I had won that first race, I would have never made it to the state Senate. It would have been, oh, okay, hey, I know what I'm doing. I don't need to learn. And instead, I really, you know, hit the books, if you will, and learned, hey, how can I be more effective as a candidate? And then even more as, how do you be an effective office holder in delivering for the people that you serve? And one of the things that I've always learned and I think is extremely valuable is that the best way to campaign is just to do your job extremely well. When you're in the thick of the campaign, it's very hard to cut through to get a message to the voter, because then you're kind of seen as just the politician that's looking for a vote. But instead, if you can show, hey, you're delivering for the people you serve, that you're there, that you're accessible. Those are the things that people really want to see and help make the campaign, the re-election, if you will, very easy.
You're still a pretty young guy. So what were you running for in 2003? I mean, senior class president or something?
Well, I was 22, and I was I had been out of college for a year. I was working for American Express. And I saw that the town clerk in my town was running unopposed. And I was on the Democratic committee. And I said, you know what? I think I could do that job very well. Let me take a stab at it. And I remember talking to a few people. Many people thought I was crazy. A few of my close friends thought it was a good idea. I was really surprised when they told me that. But I just decided, hey, I'm going to do the best that I can. And I'm going to use it as a learning experience. And that's what I did. I worked extremely hard, ran against a long-term incumbent, and I lost. But I decided, you know what, I'm gonna do it again. And 2 years later, I ran again, and I got elected by the skin of my teeth. I was 24 years old and one of the youngest elected at the time in the state. And it was a great experience. And then the idea of, particularly as a town clerk, to say, hey, we have to look at things new. Just because we've been doing it the same way for 100 years doesn't mean it's the right way or the best way to do it. And I took that and really, I think, transformed the clerk's office and did things that people didn't know or expect from their clerk. And then really took that same idea to the state Senate. And I think that's how I was able to pass more legislation than any lawmaker in the state last year. How I've been able to pass, over 150 bills into law as a senator is taking some of these issues and saying, hey, how can we do this better? Or what can make it more efficient? And I think there's a lot of things when we look closely that can make maybe a small little change that could have a profound impact on the quality of life of people in our state and in our nation. And I get really excited about some of these issues that might seem small, but have a profound effect. Early on when I got elected to the Senate, shortly after, I took on the cause of organ donation, because I saw that as, hey, this is something I know we can do better. Other states are doing better, but we're not. And having that clerk background, knowing that if you just word a form a little differently, you can have a major change. And that's why we passed Lauren's law that said when you go to the DMV and you get your driver's license or other applications, that you have to check off, would you like to be an organ donor, yes, or skip the question. And since that time, we've seen a big increase in the percentage of people enrolled in the organ donor program. We still have a lot of work to do, and we've made other changes as well. And New York has really started to turn that corner, but it's little changes like that can really make a big, big impact.
So now that you're not heading to Congress and you're going to be leaving us in the state Senate, what are you going to miss most about the state Senate? And with the caveat that, of course, you're going to miss helping people and doing things for your district. So putting all that stuff aside, what are you going to miss about the state Senate?
Well, the real awesome part about being a senator or an elected official that can make laws is, hey, you hear a problem or you see something, you can write a bill.
Right.
And you can have that impact. And it's something that's been really rewarding to me that, okay, you don't have to get approval from the boss or whatever. No, you just write the bill and then you've got to tell the story. And it's up to you to get that bill passed. But that's something that's just extremely exciting. And I've written a lot of bills over the time. Some have passed into law. Some people have totally forgotten about. Some never got the momentum, and some did. But that's something that I think I'll miss. I've been very involved with the National Conference of State Legislators. I serve on their board, and it's something that I just see that there's a professionalism in being a legislator. And one of those things that there's no like manual, if you will, to run a Senate office or to do all these things. And that organization, I think, helps in terms of, hey, talking about, hey, what are you doing in Missouri or in Washington State? What are we doing in New York? And one of the things that I do realize is that New York, we have a real responsibility to lead by example, that we call ourselves the Empire State. We have a $170 billion budget, much bigger than most states. We've got the economic engine of the world with New York City. We have so many different resources and opportunities. And that's why I think we really have to continue to push and be the example, especially when the federal government is so slow to react, that we have to be the ones that are leading. And that's why I spent my time in the Senate focused on issues to protect the most vulnerable, that I know that there's things that we can be doing that just aren't being done to the extent that they should that can make a profound difference. For years, I've been working on the direct service worker salary issue to have a real credentialing program to make sure that our direct service workers are paid a living wage. It's just one of those things that you know that you get what you pay for, and if we invest in that, in a professional workforce, that will make a huge impact on the quality of life of so many people in the state. So it's just, issues like that and working towards that. I hope I can work on these issues on the outside, but having that experience of being a lawmaker, I think, will be very, very valuable to organizations and to the people that I'll continue to work with going forward.
It seems like a lot of the Democratic presidential hopefuls who didn't make it all the way, like Pete Buttigieg and Julian Castro, are getting into the podcasting game. Do you think you're going to have your own sort of show in the near future, or are you going to probably stay away from that? Because honestly, I can't handle any competition.
Yeah, right. No, I know. I it's something that I've always wanted to do, and was I would love to participate in that. I'm going to be teaching a class at Rockland Community College on comparative government, so I'm excited about that. But just talking to a lot of people and seeing what's next. It's a exciting time. It's bittersweet to be leaving the Senate, and I guess one of the big things that I'll be missing is the camaraderie in the legislature. You get to really know the other lawmakers, particularly in the conference that you're in the Democratic conference. but everyone. It's kind of a small place in a way, and one where you share experiences and you build friendships. So I'm looking to continue those friendships with the lawmakers, with the advocates, with the people that hover around the space, the legislative space in New York.
Well, we've been speaking with State Senator David Carlucci, a Rockland County Democrat who now carries the title of professor. Senator, thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks, David.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.